It's Great Mondays Radio, a podcast exploring how work is changing in the age of AI. I'm Josh Levine, a transformation executive helping private businesses elevate how their teams operate in an AI-driven world. On the show, I speak with executives, people leaders, and other humans rethinking how decisions get made, how managers lead, and how teams are learning to adapt. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 30 minutes, and I'll tell you how. Of course, AI is making us more productive and part of our everyday workflow now. We're all struggling to figure it out. But there are some things that are happening to us that we're experiencing as we're learning how to use AI that maybe isn't ideal. And we need to think a little bit further about this. And one thing that I want to talk about is slowness as a feature, as well as why showing your work in a world where anybody can make a complete finished product is going to be useful. Today we have on Michael Villegas. He is Director Design Innovation at IA Interior Architects. He leads the firm's approach to integrating generative AI and emerging technologies into the design process. I met Michael through a mutual colleague and project that we were working on. Loved how he was thinking about this. He's got lots to say, so we're going to get into all of it today. Michael Villegas, thank you so much for coming on Great Mondays Radio.
Yes. Hey, Josh. Thanks for having me. And I thought our first conversation and interaction together, we kind of picked up the baton in a conversation that we actually never had together, but somehow culturally we were having at the same time, and we just kind of ran. And I think it took about 30 minutes until we finally introduced ourselves to each other after. We said, I think we jumped the cart before the horse, you know, a little bit too soon, but it was the shared passion that was so great. But yeah, you're right on the intro. I would say you left out the key components, which are I'm a rock musician, skateboarder, 90s video game arcade nerd, and then a cartoonist reformed into an architect. So I think those ingredients are
That's probably core. Why we synced up so hardcore. I love the way that you're I like the way that you are seeing how AI is affecting the way that we all work together. So you are obviously have an expertise in using the tool, but I wanted to talk more about some of your observations. And the one that I wanted to start with is addressing a tension that I'm feeling and I'm feeling others are feeling around what AI is doing to our nervous system and how slowness should be a feature. So let's start off. Talk to me about this observation and what that means when you say slowness as a feature.
Yeah, I think, you know, we have the speed of light. That is a limit on physics, but there is a speed to biology. There's a speed to interpretation and understanding. And that isn't a deficiency, that's a feature. That's how we experience life. We don't absorb everything instantaneously. We absorb and then we contemplate what we gather, that context that we gather. AI, conversely, does it immediately. But by definition, it also lacks any future context which may filter in, unless you actively engage with that output and give it additional context. As a human, though, we develop slowly and iteratively over time. We evolve and we refine and we perfect as more context and information filters in. So slowness is something where you spend more time with your work so that you have more time to consider. You're able to understand in my line of work, you know, I'm drawing physical, I'm creating drawings and designs and visuals. I'm making decisions sequentially. And as I make one decision, it might provide me insight that I need to back up with something I thought that I had already solved, because I have new information that changes what I thought was
Right.
already complete, right? So the slowness means giving yourself the time to allow context to arrive gradually, to allow you to reflect upon and improve your work. It's like the tortoise and the hare. The tortoise eventually wins, you know, the marathon versus the sprint analogy as well. It's not about how quickly you can do something. It's about how holistically and completely you can resolve the challenge.
That's really well put. And the struggle and what I'm trying to work through is really the kind of immediacy of what it provides and how that is affecting what we want to do. So because we can get an answer immediately, we assume that we should, because our goal is to, in the late 2020s, the goal is just to get shit done. I'm overwhelmed. I just want to tick it off the list. And that to me is, it's seductive, right? Because our benchmarks, crossing things off the to-do list, virtual or otherwise. But your argument is, in fact, you might be able to send, get this thing done and have an answer, but it won't be right or the best or the ideal approach because of the immediacy of it. Did I get that right?
Yeah, I think it comes to what we prioritize as a culture. I think we look at advertising, social media, consumerist tendencies, and everything is targeted toward selling and superficial value and speed.
Order it now. The Amazon package is coming in 2 hours, right? Like that's what we wanted.
And compare that Amazon package that shows up that you return 80% of them because the quality didn't meet the listing expectations versus you sitting down with a craftsman or an artisan or a local vendor. And they know, you have a conversation and the output is more closely aligned to what it is you were seeking in the first place. Yes, it might have cost a little more, but what is your value of time? And if you add the value of the time spent on all of those missed targets, even though they were done quickly through, let's say, an Amazon Prime or any metaphor or analogy you can subscribe to, then you can see how you're actually gaining more value by spending a little more in both time and money and effort with a goal in mind prior to just checking the task off the list. I think that task list mentality is the most common problem that I see among teams and kind of approaches to problem solving.
Mm.
Problems aren't tasks to be completed and crossed off. If you're doing them responsibly, it requires deep thought, strategy, intent. And you bring those to the table before you ever engage with any of these tools. So when I look at AI, I never approach AI with the understanding that it's going to give me output. What I'm looking for is raw material so that I can then look for the insights, the connections, and the opportunities, which then I might only peel 10% out of that and use it in my 90% manual process that I'm still engaged with. It's just another affordance. It's another tool inside of an array of my toolbox, right? So sure, I have that very specialty, carpentry device to do a very specific task, but 90% of the time I just need a hammer and nails. So I'm not going to ask that tool to do the work of what all of my other tools that have been tested over time are built for, right? So it's about having a responsible process, approach, and expectations before engaging with these admittedly supercharged and seductive tools known as all the generative AI suites that are out there.
One, a good example and one thing that I keep in my head that you told me when we were doing the work together was a great prompt. Use AI to say, what am I not thinking about? So simple and crisp. And to me, it is emblematic of the right way to engage with AI.
I completely agree. I think in addition to what am I not thinking about, it's also clarify your understanding of the context that I just provided to you. Because I want to check AI's understanding of the problem and the framing. More often than not, I find that what it gives back, it gets an idea, but I need to correct it three or four times on its interpretation of what I've told it before it's aligned. And then we can start to poke holes or find alternate branching strategies.
It's so interesting because once it sort of gets its virtual hooks into something, and you don't correct it, it doesn't let it go. I use it as an editor, even when I do my writing, and I don't know that it's misunderstood something, and then it will come up later and later in the process. And then even when I go, stop doing that, that's not what I mean, it still stays there. So I think what you're describing is where we're probably all headed in a bigger sense, which is learning how to use AI in the best way possible.
And the best way the best way to learn AI is to learn its limitations. The more you engage with it, the more you see how it hallucinates, how it keys into certain contexts that you might not want or find valuable, despite telling it not to pay attention to that piece of information. The way it tokenizes information is not the same way we interpret the information. So I think the more that you're able to understand how it operates, the more you can, I guess, reduce your frustration, steer it, or find other ways to engage with the tools so that you're managing your expectations going in. Because I think a lot of the challenge and frustration and stress with using generative AI is just mismanaged expectations built around software that and technology that used to be more explicit with its output and deterministic. And that's not what we're engaging with here.
Is it a disservice that the AI companies are designing the interface to be act more like a human companion? And I'll tell you why I'm asking this question, which is I believe it has led us to believe that it can do the thing, like we've just offloaded the cognitive tasks. So giving it a name, even when it prompts, it's got the little prompt on my, Claude, it's like thinking, I mean, sometimes it says sauteing, but still it's using a lot of it's I and me and we, and it feels like that is supposed to be a feature to make it easier to use, but has misled us to use it in a way that is not appropriate or doesn't serve our goals.
I don't know. I might take a different angle to that and say by personifying the way that it communicates, it allows for inaccuracy and a bit more what I call mythology and narrative-based output versus what you would expect from a calculator, where if I put 2 + 2, it better say 4, or else I'm going to throw it away, right? I think if it behaved like a calculator, the expectations would actually be elevated in terms of what its capabilities are. I think when it becomes a little more human and approachable, yes, it's a slippery slope, and I understand everybody approaches tech in a different way, and they might, I don't know how to describe it, but they might just, that comfort might be part of the thing that disarms them from being more critical in how they decipher and intake the information, but I also think it's designed to allow for more fluidity and flexibility in how the answer comes about. Because if you ask a question and I ask the same question, we're getting a different answer.
Yeah.
So imagine if this tool was operating deterministically. We would be scratching our heads and saying, what is this, right? So I do think, I think there's a strategy behind it more than just making it feel comfortable.
I feel like there needs to be a better framing of or analog for what this is, because the problem, and I think we're learning this, right? When, you know, 18 months ago, you would just see people go, okay, write the deck and assume it was done. And then it would, you know, include all of the errors in them. And we're learning, you know, better and better about the hallucinations. And that was the first thing. It's like, careful, the hallucinations. I wonder if it's more like it's a daft robot. You know what I mean? Like it's you can give it tasks, you can ask it questions, you can have it help you, but you can't rely on it to actually solve the problem or do the thing. It just doesn't have. And I think people are trying to provide context, and it, like, maybe it'll get better. But I wonder if it's just not, if it's in our best interest to understand that it will not solve your problem or do your work.
So it's interesting. Because I operate in a creative field, and yes, we need to execute on architecture beyond the creative and, you know, get it built. It has to meet code. There's legal implications. We have a lot of technical knowledge that goes behind it, but there is a phase and there's a lot of abstract thinking that is geared toward creativity. I really think the average person needs to approach it from their point of view and from their framing of what they need done. For me, the hallucinations and that lack of precision is the opportunity, because I am able to look at that, see that output, recognize that, you know, most of this is not accurate, it's not contextually relevant. In our case, it's not spatially relevant. But man, that one hallucination, that small detail that it added in the back could be the entire project. It can open up just a universe of creative ideas. Whereas if you're coming at it from, and I'm going to speak outside of my expertise, but you know, from an accountant or, you know, someone focused on health implications, you really can't afford for it to be inaccurate. So I would say you should be very hesitant and maybe not look to generative AI, generative being the key term in there.
That's right.
As the tool to solve your specific problem.
That's right.
Think more broadly about those opportunities in your life, in your work, or among teams where creativity in a more nebulous environment is permissible and becomes an advantage. Then you stop seeing some of the deficiencies as roadblocks, and you start taking advantage of those in your discussions and your creative output. And I think at the end of the day, creative, you know, design thinking has been a topic that has been spread across all businesses and sectors in the past, you know, few decades, as being like innovation is what's going to drive us forward. Innovation is not a defined set of rules. It is a very hazy mirage on the horizon that you're trying to define and outline.
That's why businesses have such a hard time with it, because they're trying to operationalize it, and it's hard.
Yes.
I mean, I think that's exactly right. And what my latest kind of thesis is that, sure, we can use AI for these kind of conclusive, like, make it faster, come to a thing, but it is significantly less valuable. And maybe, you know, as tokens continue to be really expensive to use, it may not even be, there may not even be ROI. And where the real value, I believe, in 18 months, what we're going to see looking forward is the real opportunity is going to be on the opening up, right? So if we think about the double diamond design process, right? The discover, what you're talking mm-hmm. about, right? The, you know, develop. That is where we're going to see the real opportunities within AI. And we never had a tool to help us do that, short of, and I had this conversation for another episode with a woman who's a facilitator and an improviser. And she uses that, those skills. Those are skills to open up and be creative, right? If you've gone to design school or art school or even architecture school, right? You've learned how to become and generate more ideas. Most people in business have not. And so to me, here's this opportunity. And that, I think, is where we're going to see the real value. All this stuff that we've been doing up until now, it's fun magic tricks. And look, it can do a thing without me, but it's not game changing, as it were.
Not at all. And it's funny that you bring up improv, because those who have worked with me, who I've guided in terms of design, younger design staff, I always talk about practicing creative improv. I actually don't love improv comedy, but I find comedy is an exercise for your brain in exploring how to connect in the moment disconnected concepts in an interesting way that engages culturally and socially, that is very synonymous with the design process. And the advantage of being able to do that and exercise your brain in that way allows you to be a better creative problem solver, designer, or whatever innovation spectrum you fall into. So it's funny that you mentioned improv, because this is a common thread that has come up many times in team conversations. A lot of people who aren't kind of experienced in that realm of abstract thought hear it and say, what is comedy? What does improv comedy have to do with anything?
Yeah.
I ask you to step outside of that and think what it affords you in terms of mental acuity.
It's incredible. So I did improv for years, starting in high school and all the way after college. And I definitely credit improv with my, like, teaching me how to facilitate a room. And I've done a lot of hard things in my life. I've been to school. Mm-hmm. Nothing has challenged my brain as much as improv, the stretch of that. And it's those weird lateral connections and how you're forced to, like, make this connection between two things in order to make a story work. And, like,
in the moment, you don't have any time.
There's no time. You have to and you're like, oh, it's just like a trust fall. And it's really, when you're doing it, it's a really incredible experience. All right. We won't geek out about that, because I do want to get to the second topic area that we kind of pre-discussed before we started recording, which is this idea of showing your work. Tell me why that's important.
I think it's always been important to have a personal process, but in the past, you could lean on the final output, knowing that there are technical hurdles in the way between the ask and the delivery, and you could just rely on the seductive final rendering, the image, the output as your source of trust. However, when everybody can do the same thing, relatively, at least superficially, close to the same quality, what is the thing that differentiates you from the others and builds the confidence and trust to, let's say, your clients or your internal team members or the community in a way that they know you have a full understanding of the strategy and not just that task-based approach? And when you show your work, you're inviting conversation, you're inviting a peek behind the curtain to confidently stand behind your thought process and say, AI isn't doing the thinking for me. I'm doing the thinking for us. And let's look at those moments in the thought process and see, there might be something else there that we can pull on. because the output isn't the goal, you can start, or it isn't the hurdle, I guess, anymore. You can go back into your work and find those iterative moments and maybe, you know, branch off and do a different aspect or study something differently. And I think it just, it's more inclusive. It brings more people into the conversation.
Yeah. it makes me think, I mean, in the same way, I was talking to somebody about, you know, the practice of writing a book and having a book. And it used to be that the goal, like if you had a book, you were credible. When you had that book, and it was like, oh, it was a publisher. And then in the past 10 or 20 years, you're self-published. You still have to put in the effort, but it's like, well, you know, is this book any good? Well, I don't know that anybody else had to, like, you know, put their seal of approval. And now you see all this AI slop. People are just writing. They just have people writing books and books and books. Doesn't matter, right? Like, you could go in. I could basically just prompt it and tell it to, you know, write a book, blah, 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 and then go get it printed, right? So that the output is no longer the proof of the thinking and the effort.
Exactly.
And that's, I didn't realize that made that connection, but that's exactly right. And the same thing, everybody.
Well, look at the short form video on social media, like Reels, TikTok, whatever. It used to be, what is the polished, high quality video output that you can put in a very short form to catch people's attention? Now it's somebody sitting in a dimly lit living room. They didn't even prep themselves, but they're talking to you directly in the camera without a script. And there's no denying that what is coming out of their mouth is coming from them because it hasn't been edited. It hasn't been curated. Sure, in the background, there might be a script. It might be manufactured to look that way. We understand that, like, people have kind of co-opted that method to kind of make things feel authentic, but still, the people in mass who are doing that they're being authentic. They're going live, and then they're just speaking candidly. I mean,
that's the, you know, there's the thing that's like sitting in the car, right? Right, like that kind of motif. It feels real and authentic. So that's the behind the scenes. And so to bring it back to work, I think, you know, and something that I've always, like a principle that I've always stood by, which is the process is the product, especially in the work that I do, where you bring people together and make sure that we're aligned and we make sure that everybody's in the same camp in order to get an idea approved and change made. To me, that's what we're really talking about and how we're going to need to invite clients, partners, peers into the process with us. Otherwise, you know, what we're going to see is just someone's going to be like, here's the answer. And you're like, well, is it? Like, I mean, I don't know. It looks nice, but is it going to do the thing that we want it to do?
Also, a process is transferable. You can educate others on a process. An output from some LLM or diffusion model isn't really affording anybody else insight into how that thing was made or why it was even made. Mm-hmm. Also, it's dependent on the tool at that point. So what's better today, ChatGPT or Claude or Gemini or Grok? It's like you're relying too heavily on what a tool can do in the moment, whereas an agnostic process you can bring to any of those tools, or you don't need the tools at all. And you can just sit down at a table and you can iterate collectively together.
Yeah.
That's what I find most empowering is how can the AI go away, do what it needs to do, but afford us the benefits of collecting this information. But I want to engage with another human or a group of humans, a community. How do we get back to physical experiences and conversations like the one we're having right now?
Yeah, I think what AI is going to, it is going to reveal kind of in a pattern, you know, it's like field, foreground, field kind of metaphor. Of there's just going to be so much AI out there, AI created artifacts out in the world that we are going to, as humans, like, hopefully be more drawn to the authentic, the in-person, the humanity of it all, right? It's a tool, but it'll maybe by force, just by force and volume, get us unstuck from this kind of social media engagement world and essentially say, oh, wait, there isn't any there. And what we really need is to understand what it's like to work with a person and to connect, to get to the things that we enjoy doing as people and understand that that's the real value, you know, a differentiator in business is to be able to create, to be able to have that human create a thing, not just a robot create a thing.
And when you get together, and I'll use just my experience in a band, writing music, performing live, touring, you develop a shorthand among a small team of individuals. You start to be able to produce output at this that almost matches, if not exceeds, the speed of generative AI, because you have worked through the process together. You have a mutual language and understanding that almost nobody else looking from the outside in would understand, but somehow the execution and the choreography and the creativity overlap seamlessly and in the moment without really having to say much. Well, what happens when AI is taking all of that creative work? That communication advantage, that shorthand that gets developed that allows for something that is more reproducible and long form, that doesn't exist anymore because you're not spending time with other people.
I didn't do the, on an individual level, I didn't do the thinking that happens when I'm writing, if I just have AI do the writing, right? It's like, I'm going through the process. I'm experiencing, we're sharing this. And it goes right back to where we started, this slowness of process of putting in the work. That's the part that makes it more fleshy, right? More real, more compelling, more emotional. That is where we're going to see the real opportunities. And I hope that we will, as a collective, come to a conclusion that here is where AI can be helpful. And here is where we need to make sure that the humans are leading the process.
I mean, creativity in general, living is a creative experience, and creativity is core to humanity. If we offload all that to AI, then what is the point? We optimize and automate everything away to where there's no point left to experience.
What's the point? Exactly. We end up like the humans on the ship in WALL-E. Right.
I knew that's where we were going. Yeah, I knew exactly that's where we were going. But yeah, I mean, it's true. And honestly, what makes us connect to the human experience more than understanding others' unique points of view and experiences? So when you think of, if these tools are producing all the output, there's going to be kind of a lukewarm sameness across everything that comes out. I don't want to hear AI's perspective when it's never taken a breath. I want to hear Josh's writing and perspective. Sure. If you are curating and editing the content that AI is helping synthesize that you've already provided to it, that's fine, because in the end you are the filter, and I want you to be the creative filter, not AI. Otherwise, why go with company A over company B over author A over author B? They're all saying the same thing.
Yeah.
So there's no connection to your audience. There's no connection to your customer. There's no connection being formed that builds a loyalty that says why I would choose one over another. Mm-hmm. And I think from a business perspective, we are always considering who our audience is, and we're trying to connect with them and build authentic connections and trust based relationships. If I'm getting from this tool over here, that tool over here, and that person over there the same response, I have no loyalty to you, your business, or your team.
Yeah.
But But you find that when you understand how to engage with these responsibly, these this tech, you can still manage and maintain that sense of authenticity, even with the advantage that it provides you in the ways that it can support your problem solving.
All right, last thing. I always like to wrap up the episode by asking a question or asking for a piece of advice. What is the one thing or the first place that a leader of a team should act or go or ask to help their group? Let's say it's their peer group or the team that they lead. Better engage with AI, right? In a more, I don't want to say productive, in a way that's going to build the right kind of muscle. What would you point to that if that person came to you and said, what's the next thing? What is the thing I should be doing next?
I think like any interpersonal relationship and connection, you have to understand what people care about. And in order to do that, you have to almost forget about the productivity, the optimization, the business, any of the advantage that the technology is providing. You need to understand who's their family? Where do they come from? What types of things do they care about outside of the work that they're doing? From that point forward, you now know how to engage with them. So you can find ways to reframe the advantages of the technology that you might find are operationally advantageous or provide other benefits for the business side of things. And you can reframe them in ways that respects where they're coming from, respects the things that bring them value prior to this wave of technology, and then show them how it actually can amplify in one or two ways the things that they are already finding the most value in terms of their day-to-day experience. That could be work-related, but it could also be outside of the work environment. But that's how I've found it the best way to connect with those people who are by default kind of hesitant, maybe pessimistic, or AI averse, is, okay, what is it that you care about most? I'm going to find a use case where the AI would help you do more of that and not take that away. And now I will encourage you to give it a test run on your own. Once they do, and they take those, they plan that sandbox on their own time, that's when they come back and say, oh, I understand it now. And then they do the experiments on their own. You no longer have to volunteer them to use this technology.
And I love that. And I'll tell you why that getting to know who they are as a human is the benefits are multiple. And it's one of the things that I advise on the culture side of my business when you're trying to rebuild or strengthen relationships. I want to know who you are beyond work, the work project, because that allows me to see you as a human being and understand how to connect with you, which is something that if we, pre-Zoom, right? We show up in person and continue to connect with people in as humans, we learn who they are. We get to see more than just their shoulders up and, their work background. And that is really what enables us. And we didn't realize that that was what was beneficial. So to the working and the collaborative effect. So 2-3-4-fold benefit. You should definitely get to know your folks and then use it in a way that allows you to connect with them on the things that they care about. I think that's great.
I agree. That's well said. I try to be very honest about my approach to technology in general. I find it exciting. I love to be on the edge of what's coming. So for me, that's energizing, but for others,
not for everybody.
It's the opposite. So just being self-aware, to understand that not everybody's goal is your goal, and that's okay, and that's the collaboration and the complementary approach that makes all of this work, right?
Absolutely. Amazing. Michael Villegas, Director, Design Innovation at IA Interior Architects. You can learn more about him on LinkedIn. Check him out, linkedin.com/MikeLasVegas. Michael, amazing. Thank you so much for coming on Great Mondays Radio. This was really, really powerful.
Thank you, Josh, for having me. And I'm glad we could pick up right where we left off.
Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest on our program, head over to radio.greatmondays.com and fill in the application. Have a friend you think would find this episode interesting? Send it to them. And while you're at it, rate and review. It really helps. I'd love to connect. Send me an email, josh@greatmondays.com. And if you're interested in learning more about how I help private businesses elevate how teams operate in an AI-driven world, check out greatmondays.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.